Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, February 5th. I'm Ray Graff. Rich Guthrie has soared back to WAMC for today's program to share his birding knowledge and answer your questions about birds. To take part in the conversation, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Email us if you want to, voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Rich is one of the all-time greats on this program, and it's always a popular show. So call early, 1-800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, your birding questions coming up on Vox Pop after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing birds today on the program, and when we do that, we bring back our resident avian expert, Rich Guthrie. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC. He is a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. Always great to have Rich Guthrie back with us. If you have a question about birds, 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us if you want, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, so nice to have you back.
Hey, glad to be here.
Now, right before we walked in Studio A, you said this is the low point for birds. First of all, how do you know that?
Well, just climatically speaking.
Yeah.
We're at the dead end of the dead of winter, and things start picking up right about now, and it, right on schedule. The days are getting longer. The lowest low temperatures are behind us, and they be, you know, this is talking the averages over a long time, but
right.
it's the pattern, and birds are starting to come back.
Some migrant birds. Yeah, some are with us all the time.
Oh yeah, yeah. But I'm talking about the early migrants.
And what are the earliest ones that will be here?
Well, just the other day, a good friend spotted a turkey vulture coming north.
Right,
and that's a sure sign of spring. And then yesterday, I heard a fish crow doing his, I'm here, hi there.
A crow, but it's called a fish crow.
And different kind of crow.
What makes this different from the garden variety crow that we see here all the time?
Yeah, the cornfield crow is a guy that is out there. That's the all-American crow.
Yeah.
That's the guy and gal, the ah.
Right. And then the raven, of course, is.
Yeah.
And then the fish crow sounds like.
Ah. Subtle. They know the difference.
They know the difference. And they're near the water?
Well, not necessarily, but yes. They're more like the urban crow in the summertime. The American crow is out there in the countryside at the cornfields.
They stay, right? They're here all the time?
Yeah, they're here all the time. And some of the fish crows actually do stay over. Their winter range is not that far south, and that, you know, that's why they're here, right at the crack of spring.
Mm.
And the turkey vulture, same thing. The black vulture is the one that's here all year round. And the turkey vulture is the one that migrates south and comes back in the spring. And hello, we're home.
Oh, that's great. And that's always good news. Our number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. What's new with the bird count? Anything going on?
Oh, lots. Yes. We have coming up on President's Day weekend, we have the notorious Great Backyard Bird Count.
Oh, already? I was referring to the one we had spoken about the last time you were on.
The Atlas Project.
Yeah.
Yes. That's the other hot thing topic going on right now. The Atlas Project is New York statewide. Visitors from out of state are welcome to come in and have fun. But both of those are long-term studies to monitor the changes of what's going on out there. The Great Backyard Bird Count, which is the 4 days around President's Day weekend, February, 17, 18, 19,
yeah, a week or
thereabouts,
two from now, yeah.
Something in that order, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And simply put, you just go on to Great Backyard Bird Count, which is an Audubon Society and Cornell University sponsored program, free to enter your data. And what's fun is I just happened to look at, you know, that's not one of the projects that I get myself involved in too much. I'd rather out there, hands dirty, feet wet, tromping around in the woods rather than looking around in the backyard.
Like we all do.
Yeah. But I look at the map of the participation from last year, and this thing is global.
Really?
Really, the participation from India, New Zealand, and North and South America is incredible. It's wonderful. And all of this is people putting in the birds that they saw at their feeder at the backyard.
But you're one of the people who actually goes through the submissions and vets them, right?
Yeah, make sure that we got it, you know, that the bird is one that you'd expect to find there. We're always ready to find and happy to see the unexpected surprise. But for the most part, we want to make sure that whatever is being reported is accurate enough to be accepted.
Now, this is an interesting point, and I know we've discussed this before. Supposing you do have that outlier and you see a submission and
pictures.
And okay. Ordinarily, you'd just say, okay, well, that's not right. Somebody made a mistake.
Yeah.
And then if there's no picture, then you discount that information?
No, not necessarily. There's a lot of information. You know, the details that go into the report. How well did they actually see it? You know, is this something that was heard or the neighbor told them about?
Or, right.
Did they actually see it? And then what did they see? And did they name it correctly? A lot of times we get stuff that was correctly identified, but the wrong name applied to it. Mm. So, you know, we just some serious things, some subtle things, and some matter-of-fact things. And sometimes we just can't resolve it. It's so unusual that mere words can't make it happen.
Hmm.
You know, that's why pictures critically important. And
where do those files go? Is there an X files for these things?
eBird.
No. But what I'm saying is, where do the ones that we have no idea what this is or whether this is legit? Do you put those in a file someplace?
They're in eBird.
Yeah.
They go into the eBird big box. And they sit there, and perhaps it's the beginning of a new trend, or there are subsequent reports. So it can be retrieved. Mm. So nothing is ever lost or thrown away, permanently discarded. It's available for future reference, if necessary.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. Birds today on Vox Pop. The number is 1-800-348-2551. And we start out with Jerry in West Sand Lake. Jerry, you're on.
Yeah, I'm planning a trip to Trinidad, and I wonder if Rich has any ideas or suggestions.
Well, I would recommend a couple of things. Are you going alone, or are you going with a group, a guided tour, or is this personal?
I'm going alone to the Aserite Nature Center.
Oh, there you go. I couldn't have suggested anything stronger than that.
Yeah,
you're going to the right place, and this, of course, is the right time. It's a lot warmer down there, and it's a lot more enjoyable. And
have you been there, Rich?
I have not. You know, that's one of those places I really want to get to go to, and just have not had the opportunity. But yes, that's the place to go. The Aserite, I forget what the term is, preserve down there in Trinidad.
Nature Center.
Yeah, sounds good. And they are the people. They are the place. It's a long-standing place, a long history and tradition, and very reliable. And then if you have time and inclination from there, they can guide you to the next place to visit, the spin-off trips, the little day trips, the overnight trip maybe to another spot. But that's the place to go to. Great start.
Yeah, and then Tobago?
Yeah. They will give you that information.
Yep.
Well, Jerry, I hope you call us back after you return and give us a little update next time Rich is here.
I'm envious.
Okay, good.
Thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Ron is in Bolton Landing. Ron.
Yeah, hi, Rich. How do I attract Baltimore Orioles to my feeders in Bolton?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not easy. Baltimore Orioles are a terrific bird. Down my way, we call them the New Baltimore Oriole, but that's being from New Baltimore, New York, that
right.
is.
No, yes, I got you,
yeah,
yes.
Right. So So anyway, Ron, Baltimore Orioles, when they come back in the spring, they're mainly insect-eating blackbirds. They're really a member of the blackbird family, and they like flower buds and insects. It's very difficult to get them to turn their diet over to something that you can predict and provide. They're also a fruit-eating species, berries and the like. People down south attract orioles by putting out orange slices or halves of orange. And the orioles, when they find those, they really that does attract them. It's very successful. But they have lots of oranges down there. And
Do they actually eat the oranges, or are there insects that are attracted to the half-on orange?
An insect should happen to wander in, they'd be more than happy to devour it.
But the birds will eat the oranges?
They're after the orange, juice, and the pulp, and the like, yeah. So, but most orioles don't even know what an opened-up orange is. So you'd have to find one that has learned the goodness of oranges from the South, in Texas or Florida or California, where they learned, somebody put them out, they saw another bird feasting on it, they tried it out, they liked it, and they keep coming back. But until they find it and find it out, they're not drawn to oranges necessarily. So you need an educated oriole to make that work. So I would try it. I would try it and see what happens. And when it does happen, it's the greatest thing. Other people have put out things like grape jelly.
Yeah,
and the like, and again, once they find it, you got them hooked.
Are there any other birds that will eat oranges?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Other birds will. Most birds will if they find out that there's something nutritious in there. Mm. So it's a matter of learning, and they watch other birds. Birds learn by watching, and sometimes they'll try something out. You'll find, let's say, a warbler testing out the bird seed at the feeder. And it says, no, I don't think so. It keeps moving on.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Birds Today. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. It's Birds Today. Rich Guthrie is back in the house, and more exciting bird events for you, boys and girls.
Yep, happening right this very evening. If you have time, you want to come down to Coxsackie, New York. We're doing our regular owl hawk survey this evening. This is something that's been going on for many years.
Yeah.
And we're gathering at the Greene County IDA. It's at 270 Mansion Street this evening at 4:15.
Yeah.
And from there, we'll go out and look for, in small groups, we'll go out and look for hawks and owls as they come out of their roost for the evening pursuits. So that's at 4:15 tonight at 270 Mansion Street, Coxsackie, New York,
okay,
which is just south of Albany. And then they have the Breeding Bird Atlas that's going on right now, and that
Correct.
Goes on at has begun already with the owls that have begun nesting or territorial calling. And there's a great opportunity to sign up, and that you could go to ebird.org/AtlasNewYork.
Okay.
Or just look up Atlas New York, and you'll find that information
All
there.
All right. Uh-huh.
A couple of other things. I've got a program coming up I'll be doing it for the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club at the Colony Sanford Library in Colony, New York,
mm-hmm.
and that's on March 2nd, Monday, March 2nd. Then, again, we already mentioned the Great Backyard Bird Count. That's February 14th through the 17th. You could go to gbbc.birdcount.org, the Great Backyard Bird Count, .birdcount.org, to participate in it. And that's, again, that's a Cornell Audubon Society cooperative. Couple of club events coming up. The Waterman Bird Club will be doing a walk this Saturday, the 8th of February, to Schwangunk Grasslands. And then on Wednesday, February 12th, they'll be visiting the campus of Vassar College. And one more trip on the 19th of February to Thompson's Pond, all in the Poughkeepsie, Dutchess County, New York area. WatermanBirdClub.org. the Mearns Bird Club down in Orange County, New York, on February 15th, is their fabulous eagle trip. But once again, February 15th, that is at the Goat Trail on Route 6 by Bear Mountain.
Oh, yeah.
Right by the Bear Mountain Bridge. And you can contact the Mearns Bird Club to get information about that.
And you'll reliably find eagles there.
Oh, yeah. Certainly find eagles. The question is, how many? Will there be more than 50? Will there be more than 75? Will there be 100 this year? And
do you ever feel threatened when there are that many eagles around?
Well, they're distant. It's not like they're hovering overhead. You'll see one or two come by closely, but most of them you'll be scanning up and down the Hudson River looking for them as they're perched along. In a normal winter, and this is not a normal winter, you'd be seeing them on the ice floes out on the Hudson River this time of year. The Southern Adirondack Audubon Society is doing their first Saturday bird walks, and that will be next first Saturday is March 7th, and they'll be at the Spring Run Trail up in Saratoga Springs, New York, the Southern Adirondack Audubon Society.
Yeah,
the Athol Bird Club over there in Springfield area will be birding the North Shore of Massachusetts on February 22nd. Check them out, atholbirdclub.org. And then one more, and that's the John Burroughs Natural History Society down in Kingston, New York. They'll be going to Kingston Point Birdwalk on February 15th.
All right.
That's one I'd like to join in on.
Hudson. Are you going
to
go?
I'd like to if the John Burroughs Natural History Society in Kingston, New York.
All right, Rich, a couple of emails here, and then we'll jump back on the phones at 800-348-2551. This one came in from Becky. Becky writes, I live in Williamstown near a nature preserve. There has been a flock of bluebirds that I've seen quite often over the past month. Is this normal for bluebirds? Are they becoming more common?
Well, yes and no. First of all, bluebirds do overwinter in small numbers in our area.
Ah.
The numbers have been increasing as people have been successfully putting out bluebird nest boxes that have been helping the bluebirds, and the population of bluebirds has increased.
Hmm.
And so therefore, you're going to have a few more that are available to hang out through the winter.
All right.
And they find a nice sheltered area where there may be some food available. In the wintertime, it's mainly berries of one sort or another.
Yeah.
And whatever few insects they may come upon.
So not out of the question and not that uncommon.
Well, always a delight, but yes, not out of the question.
This one is from Jonathan in East Chatham. My question, is there a theory as to why some birds flock together as starlings do and birds like cardinals that do not?
It's the nature of the species. Some birds are more gregarious than others. Some families of birds are more gregarious than others. And it's their tolerance of one another. And with the case of the starling, those flocks of starlings are actually part of their survival techniques. One of the best ways to spot a hawk in the air is look for those murmurations of starlings up there. That big black cloud of starlings that's swirling back and forth. Someplace not far, usually right behind them or perhaps a little over them, it'd be a hawk. And they do that as part of their group defense, power in numbers, safety in numbers.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We jump back on the phones and head to Susquehanna, Pennsylvania. Mike, you're on.
Oh, thanks for taking my call, Ray. Hello, Rich.
Hello.
I have quite a lot of property in Susquehanna, Pennsylvania, and a lot of birds that I watch each year. About 20 years now, I've been feeding them the black oil sunflower seeds and suet cakes and things of that nature. But the last 2 years, we've had quite a lot of sparrows coming in and disrupting the nesting birds for the springtime.
Mm.
And I was wondering if there was anything I could do to get rid of them without hurting them, of course, but to shoo them away, because it's disrupting our bird watching.
I know what you're saying. I've had an influx of sparrows. I presume we're talking about the house sparrow. Or what?
Right, yes.
Yes.
Brown, ugly, right.
Nice.
I know what you're saying. And they're sort of like the uninvited guest to the feeder. And unfortunately, there's there's not a heck of a lot that you can do for it. You could change the bird food composition, the type of bird food. They're not all that fond of black oil sunflower seed or thistle seed.
The sparrows?
The sparrows. No,
that's what he uses, though.
I bet you they're after some of the other stuff, like the millet, the cracked corn, and the like.
I don't use a millet at all, quite honestly, because my wife hates the weeding, see?
Yes, yes. Then what I will say is that there's not much you can do about that, because they are opportunistic. They are very prolific. They're very numerous. They're one of these gregarious species. When there's one, there's 10. When there's 10, there's 20. So
what do you do, Rich?
I feed them. They come and go.
And
to me, they act sort of like a decoy. They bring in other birds. Other birds feel more comfortable with these birds in presence. So I just tolerate them. They're annoying. What bothers me more is that they're noisy as all get out. And I have my backyard. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. What I find happening is we have nesting swifts that come in for the spring. They're kind of like a barn swallow, but much more fast and elegant.
Mm-hmm.
And they've gone into the nest sites and killed the parents and the young to take over the nesting box.
Yes.
We have, quite honestly, about 46 nesting box on the property, and I've watched them do that to quite a few close to the house.
Hmm. Well, you're right about that. It wouldn't be swifts that are nesting in the box. A swift will nest in a tree or chimney. But the swallows will nest in the box, the tree swallows.
Swallows, right, yes, swallows.
And there are measures that you can use to discourage the house sparrow from entering the swallow or bluebird nest boxes. And you're right about that. They are nasty when it comes to other birds. So you can put an attachment onto the hole in front of the nest box, which tends to discourage the sparrows. Or there's another kind of nest box with a hole in the top. That they really don't like.
Yeah.
And other birds don't see
them. Why don't they like that?
I guess they don't like to see the sky above or the rain coming down on them, whatever.
Very interesting.
They prefer a cover.
The one good thing about this is we have quite a bit of peregrine falcons on the property, and I do get quite a kick out of watching them dive in and scoop up one or two now and then.
Well, there you go. Isn't nature wonderful, eh?
Well, there you go. And again, that's what sparrows do. They draw attention to themselves and bring in visitors.
Mike, thanks for the call. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Bernie in Liberty. Bernie, you're on.
Hey, thank you so much. So I just want to confirm what he said before regarding Baltimore Orioles. I started putting out oranges. I sliced the orange, put them out in trees near my property on some spiky kind of stuff, and the Orioles come and they love it.
Well, there you go. And I'm going to suggest that these are the same Orioles coming back to your yard there.
Hmm.
And what happens is most birds have this incredible strong sight fidelity. They like it where they were. They'll come back to where they were. And I believe that's the case with your situation. And once you get them hooked, they'll share that information or the others will learn from it. And so you'll have subsequent generations that will also appreciate the oranges or grape jelly that's out there available for them. So you're one of the lucky ones. And neighbors who don't have that yet, they can try it and hope for the best. And if it works, then bingo, you're off and running.
Well, I think each year I get a little bit more. It just feels that way that I get more Orioles each year. So thank you, and thank you a lot.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. And the beautiful thing about the Baltimore Oriole is that it's a beautiful bird. It's a very colorful bird. The females of the Orioles are not quite so spectacular looking, but they're the masterful architects. They're the ones that build that incredible woven nest. And how they do that is beyond me. The nest is finely woven strands of grasses and fibers, sometimes with some string or cord in there, but it's really sturdy. the oriole nest will stay together and withstand the harshness of winter. Mm. Won't be used again, but you'll look around on the willow trees and the elm trees out in the neighborhood, and you'll see the old oriole nest still pendulant up there. So,
well, you mentioned they'll come back, and a couple of questions. One, will they come back to the same nest or build a new one?
They will build a new nest, and but they come back to the same yard.
All right. Two, how long do they live? In other words, how many years are they likely to come back?
Well, that's a good question. The, most wild birds, you know, it's a jungle out there. And the highest percentage of birds born in the spring or summer don't make it through the first winter. It's, you know, it's one of those harsh statistics.
Yeah.
And this is why they lay four, five, or six eggs.
Right.
So that the chances of one or two of them will survive till the next year. So most birds, 75%, rough figure, don't make it through the first year.
Mm. Will there be a generational shift? Will the same family, extended
yes.
family, come back to that spot?
Yes. Most birds will come back to where they were hatched out.
Mm.
And I like to think, just from my own banding studies and others, is that birds travel as a family group. It's not intentional. It just happened to leave on the same trigger time and travel in the same environmental conditions and go as far as they all seem to do and come back and come down during the usually in the course of the night.
Mm.
And I've seen this with some of the activities that I've been doing. You'll see, let's say, a not common bird from the north migrating through the area. You'll see a Blackburnian warbler. And nearby there may be a female Blackburnian warbler. And nearby there may be an immature Blackburnian warbler.
Mm.
Now, it's a coincidence, perhaps, that the three of these were in the same area at the same time. I like to think they were all a part of the same family, just all traveling together.
And the third question, and then we'll get back to the phones, 800-348-2551. You mentioned the term visual fidelity.
No, sight fidelity.
Oh, sight fidelity.
Yes.
All right. Now, sight fidelity. Presumably, they remember visually what they see.
The cues, the navigational cues to get them back.
So
to
you're saying SITE and not SIGHT?
Correct.
Interesting.
Yes.
And how do we know about sight fidelity, and how do we measure sight fidelity, and what do you know about sight fidelity?
This has all been borne out by bird banding studies where you tag a particular bird, let it go, it goes to where it wants to go and comes back. And you recapture it, you see the same tag that you put on there the year before that. And this is not only summer visitors, but also winter visitors. There's an incredible amount of sight fidelity, both in the summer range for nesting and the winter range for foraging through the winter months.
And what does this tell us about the memory capacity of birds? Not necessarily IQ, but memory capacity.
It is it's probably not so much by memory, because they're going to be going over areas that they've never seen before for the first time.
But they end up in the same spot.
And that's the incredible nature of the navigational skills. There is something in their system that tells them that they want to be in central Massachusetts in the spring. So they go down to Ecuador, Panama, Cuba for the wintertime. And then in the spring, they come back up again. And they're looking, they're searching for, navigationally oriented, in a direction of that field or that farm or that backyard in upstate New York or Connecticut or
what have
you.
That doesn't answer the question, though. I mean, central Massachusetts is a lot more general than some guy's backyard in central Massachusetts, where you say birds will come back to the same yard.
Hence the incredible nature of this phenomenon.
Oh.
I know, it's mind-boggling. I mean, tiny little bird brain. And it does not have a GPS system it downloaded, but it has it ingrained in its system.
What is ingrained? Is it a magnetic signature? Is it a scent?
Good question. And the current thinking is that it is related to the geomagnetic fields, the flux of the Earth. But there are other clues that help them get to back and forth. They navigate by virtue of the stars overhead at night, or by polarized light at the sunset, sunrise. I mean, and also probably the strongest clue or cue that they use is geomagnetic fields, the gravitational magnetic fields of the Earth's surface. And so,
Which changes, though? I mean, you see that the polar... The pole shifts around. It's in Russia now. And so how do they compensate for these things and still get to the dude's backyard in Massachusetts?
A good question.
Rich. Is anybody doing any research on this?
Yes, we all are. We're working very hard on this. And this may account for some of the strays that turn up. Let's say right now in Dutchess County, New York, there's a summer tanager at a bird feeder in the winter down there. That doesn't belong anywhere near there right now. But something is going. This is an anomaly, that's for sure. It's just a singular bird happens to be misplaced. And, you know, good luck to it. It's not a good time of year to be spending in Dutchess County if you're a summer tanager.
Not that there's anything wrong with Dutchess County.
Not at all. But for fruit eating bird species, Central Peru is probably a better bet.
Let's take a break. Rich Guthrie is our guest, and we'll get back to the phones in a moment. 800-348-2551. Birds Today. We'll be back. Welcome back to Vox Pop. Rich Guthrie is here. Today it's Boyd's. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. Rich, your blog is back for the new year.
I'm back again. I know.
Exciting.
I've been negligent with that. Now I'm back. And I'll tell you what drilled me is the Atlas. I love the Atlas so much.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be blogging about my activity with the Atlas, and I'm going to want to get stories from others who are out there doing this Breeding Bird Atlas project, which is a four-year project. I mean, I don't want to put commitment too strenuously.
There's no contract, right?
There is no contract. Okay. No, just get out there and do it. And it, what it does is it puts a whole different perspective on going out and seeing birds. I mean, you're not only looking for the birds, but you're also watching their behavior. And you're trying to establish a pattern that might indicate that they are indeed nesting in the area. And so, you go to an area, one of your Atlas blocks.
Yeah.
And it puts a whole new meaning to finding a robin.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, okay.
It's not just a robin anymore. This is now a robin that's nesting in the area.
Yeah.
And the clues that lead you to that conclusion are, that's part of atlasing.
How do people find your blog?
That would be ebird.org.
That's your blog?
No. Oh, the blog.
How do people find your blog?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm talking about it. The blog is...
I just go with the flow,
Rich. You know, it's been a while since I did that.
I hear you.
TimesUnion.com/blog. And then you just scroll down and look for my picture or the word birds.
All right, very good. And this email came in from Jay. Jay writes, my sister, in an effort to improve her family's diet and rectify a moment of weakness, threw a box of just-purchased powdered donuts out into her backyard, counting on the neighborhood murder of crows to eat the evidence, which they immediately did. No harm, no foul, right? Unless sugary fried treats are somehow bad for birds. What say you?
Not bad.
No?
Not bad. Good for birds. They need that high-energy food.
I got to tell you, it's a sin to throw out a box of fresh donuts.
Whole different story. Yeah. But if you got a murder of crows around, they'll eat the evidence as a secret, and then you're off the hook.
This one's from Wendy in Hamden. I've had this beautiful male pheasant in my backyard since December, enjoying the bird seed on the ground. How long do you think he'll stay, and what else can I give him to eat? Don't say donuts.
Donuts?
Donuts, really? The pheasant will eat the donuts?
Crack corn, best bet. Crack corn, cheap. And pheasant? What's it doing there?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Hampton, Mass.
Hampton, Mass. Somebody, pheasants are not native to the area. And, they get here because somebody put them there.
Yeah.
And I would suggest that it was probably somebody's hand-raised pheasant. Okay. Backyard bird that wandered away.
Right.
So you're feeding somebody's pet or a good project.
This one is from Karen. Last year, we put up a feeder near our kitchen window, and had many cardinals coming to feed. Not so this year. I saw only one when I first put it up in December. Since then, none. Can you figure out what could be happening? I still see them at my neighbor's house.
Well, again, this is that whole business about this winter, this unusual winter that we're having. It's so mild that they're not stressed. They only come they like to visit you, but only when they have to.
Yeah.
And if they don't have to, they're not going to.
It's like my relatives.
Well, there you go. Yeah. You know, you got to put a lunch on the table there, and they'll, you know, the door will be knocking.
Right. It's getting them to go is the tricky part.
And that's the same thing with the birds. Now, they have options, and they're exercising their options. But I will note that this is in line with a number of other reports I've been hearing about lately. We've talked to this about this on other shows.
Yeah.
And that there seems to be a decline in some of the bird species.
Yeah, but Karen says they're still around. They're at the neighbors' houses.
Well, then it's a matter of the neighbor. It's easier for them to get to and from their overnight roost spot, a little more convenient for them, or the choice of food, or perhaps other factors,
a predator nearby,
unwanted cat nearby, or the like.
This one is from Amy. Had Baltimore Orioles at my hummingbird feeder all last summer in Hoosick Falls.
Wonderful. Again, they love sugar, sugar water that the hummingbird feeders, and there are specially designed Oriole feeders that use hummingbird mixtures. And once again, this is a learning thing. They don't ordinarily identify a bird feeder as a source of food, but once they do, they'll be back.
You think they like donuts?
No.
I mean,
I will say never say never, because once again, you get an overwintering Oriole in some area that may watch the nuthatches or the woodpeckers testing out the suet feeder. And they'll test it out and say, not bad, and I'll be back.
I bet you put a cider belly donut out there, that bird is all over it.
Oh, a jelly donut.
Oh, you ever had the... Oh, we'll talk about that later. Donuts. Oh, that's a great idea for a show. This is from Ann. I spotted a pair of kingfishers flying along the creek that borders my property a few weeks ago. Do they migrate, or do they sometimes stay for the winter?
Sometimes stay for the winter. Again, it's a question of how much available food there is, and open water with kingfishers. Open water is the clue.
Yeah.
And if there's open water, they might stick around a little bit longer. They're taking a chance, you know. You get a hard freeze overnight. They're going to have to rely on energy reserves to get out of here down south where there may be some open water.
So, now how long can they rely on energy reserves?
Depends on how well they've been doing before it froze up, you know. And usually not a good idea.
Okay.
You know, that's why most of them are gone. But you're going to have a few pioneers or hangers-oners, and these are the ones that improve, let's say, that change the dynamics of the population. We saw this with Carolina wrens. I mean, year after year, a few of them would stay north. We'd get a harsh winter. They'd all get wiped out. Nature is cruel.
Yeah.
And nature is nature. And but those few that lingered on became the stronger of the group, and the population is now well established over winter here.
Yeah, it's amazing.
They're here.
All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest, and Bill is in Albany. Bill.
Yes, good day. Ray, I understand today's program is for the birds.
You betcha.
That's why I'm calling. TV commercial, Progressive Insurance has a number of TV ads that features an emu.
Yeah.
And the emu, I'm preaching to the choir, it looks like it's a cousin of the ostrich.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be a very intelligent animal. So what can you tell us about the emu? Like, country of origin? Is it a bird of prey? Is it a predator? And does it like eclair donuts?
Yes to the last. They'll eat anything, including buttons off your shirt if you give them the chance.
Yeah.
Now, the emu and ostrich are closely related, but not at all. The ostrich is an African species, couple of species over there, and the emu is a South American species. They're both families of flightless birds that comprise several different species, and there are from Argentina to Peru in South America, the emu. They're intelligent birds, for sure. They're very powerful, and they are fast runners.
All right, Bill, thanks a lot for the call. Do you remember Fox's Zoo?
No.
Over on the Rensselaer side of the river?
No, I don't.
I remember going there as a kid, and I had a Mets shirt on, Mets logo. And we were, I don't think it was Catskill Game Farm. I'm pretty sure it was Fox's. And an ostrich was walking around and took a peck right out of my Mets logo and left a mark that was there for years.
They're strong birds.
Yeah, but what is it about colors they like? There was no food on my Mets shirt that I could see.
I can't answer for emus, but sometimes...
Well, I think it was an ostrich, though, I think.
Yeah, or an ostrich. And sometimes it is what they call pecking order. Yeah. And it could be this thing just sort of establishing its presence and letting you know where you stand.
Of course, this was probably 1975, so the Mets were awful. So maybe just hated the Mets.
That could be. Maybe he's a Yankee fan.
All right, fair enough. Back to the phones. And Miriam in New Paltz. Hello, Miriam.
Oh, it's me right now.
Yes, Hi. It is.
Yes. Thank you for having me on the air. Great
sure.
show.
Thanks.
Question about sparrows.
Mm-hmm.
Our feeder attracts a lot of them, and we bought but have not deployed a sparrow trap because we're ambivalent about using it.
Mm-hmm.
But we also know about the bad habits of them in terms of taking over other birds, kind of like
sparrows.
You know,
the house
so they're
sparrow,
bad habits.
Yeah, the house sparrow is not a nice neighbor. They don't play well with their neighbors.
Really?
Yeah. So
what are your thoughts? And this is like a contraption, you know, the size of a bread box or something.
Yeah, I understand. First of all, you need to be careful because the house sparrow. Is not what we call a protected bird species in New York State.
Oh, I know that, and everything
yes.
else is and should be.
Yes,
yeah.
And so you want to be careful that you're not catching the wrong species. Incidental catching is unavoidable, and you have to be careful to release them unharmed. The house sparrow, it's up to you, I think. You can take them someplace, and not highly recommended because... You know, you're just bringing a problem to somebody else's locale.
Well, bring it to somebody you don't like. Right?
How about finding a falconer?
You could do that, but they're not going to be interested in house sparrows. The falconer, it's a good point, and no, they're not going to be interested in that. Although a rehabilitator might be interested in them as
a rehabilitator. Well, I'm talking about feeding them to predators.
I know
no
what you're saying.
I know what you're saying, Miriam. I'm with you on this.
And a rehabilitator may have some predator birds that under their care.
Ah, that needs a snack.
Just find some kind of raptor center and,
This is really taking a dark turn. I got to tell you something.
Well, yeah, especially, we have people out there that are actual fans of sparrows and they're not liking what they're hearing.
Yeah, that's right. Well...
I didn't use my last name.
Thank you, Miriam.
And I will say that over in England, where the house sparrow originated, most of them that came to North America, imported, the house sparrow and the tree sparrow, the Eurasian tree sparrow, having a very hard time over there. They're very concerned about the nature of the populations over there. They're declining rapidly. And it has something to do with the changes in the countryside, perhaps, or pesticide use or what have you.
Very interesting. So, Rich Guthrie is our guest. Jerry is in Tribes Hill. Jerry.
Yeah, good afternoon. I have a question on the Baltimore Orioles. I had a huge elm tree on my property. I'm out in the country and kind of isolated out here. There was no other elm trees around, and it survived. It's probably 60, 75 feet tall, and I had Baltimore Orioles that would nest in it every summer. Now, the tree has since died, and I had to have it taken down about 5 years ago. I have weeping willow trees on the property, but they don't seem to attract the orioles to the point where they will nest in them.
Well, I'm surprised.
Is there any type of...
Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Is there any type of man-made or any type of enhancements I can make to that willow tree that will attract them?
I'm afraid not. It's entirely up to them. And I'm really surprised that they're not liking the willow tree. What it is the elm tree they like elm trees because of the pendulant branching on there, with the branches that hang down much like the willow tree does. And they like that because it affords them a protection against predators that might climb out on a limb and have a hard time getting down to the lower reaches of those hanging branches.
Right.
I thought it might have something to do with the height, because they would always nest probably 30 feet above the ground, like you said, on the end of those downhanging branches.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the willows are that high.
Well, there you go. That may be the difference right there. So a little time and patience and the willow might reach the height suitable for the Orioles. They do. They do. And the other fast-growing tree is a silver maple that also has descending branching that Orioles.
Yeah, I've got a couple of really big those type of trees also, and it's just not attracting the nest. I have them in passing because they have a very distinctive song.
Yes, I do.
And I really miss having them.
Well, I don't blame you. I would miss them as well. And I don't have – there's not much you can do individually other than keep an eye out for other willow trees that they might be nesting in nearby.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Let's go to Mame in Westerlo. Hello, Mame.
Hi. I have a question about crows. I'm a big fan of crows, and I've recently started reading a book called The Gifts of the Crow.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been trying to attract them, and it seems what I've done is attract a load of ravens.
Oh, excellent.
Well,
that's
great. I like that better, personally.
Oh, you do?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And tell me why.
Well, I think ravens have a great deal more character. First of all, they're a little more individualistic. You know, the crows are everybody's crow. The raven is they have a lot of personality, so to speak, and character. They're bigger and more formidable, and they're more vocal with a greater variety of vocalizations. And when they start their courtship flight, which is right about now, dear Breeding Bird Atlas participants, keep an eye out for the courtship of ravens. They have a spectacular aerial display.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, man.
Is it suitable office, or can you watch it?
If you know a place where Ravens and Thatcher Park might be a place to go to in our area, over there by the mountains over there outside of Holyoke, Massachusetts, up in the Adirondacks, the Ravens, when they start their love song, courtship flights, and then the young are like playful puppies. They're in the air just cavorting left, right, all over the place.
Oh, that's nice.
And then there's
the
crow.
But it's not like a woodcock flight, is it?
No, not at all. This thing here is sort of like going to the Blue Angels at an air show.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, terrific. Oh,
zoom and
wow,
bloom
cool.
And dive and barrel roll and on. So,
I guess it's worth keeping them around then.
And in the daytime, you don't have to worry about going out there at night. Although, I will say, in a future event, I will be liking to take folks out on a woodcock walk, because you raise a good point there. That's another spectacular display. But
that's spectacular.
But at night, it's kind of hard to see and appreciate.
Mm. Yeah.
So good luck with the crows.
The reason that I was interested in the crow because I love the idea of them bringing you gifts, of the sort of acknowledgement of, I like the idea of the interaction.
What do they bring?
Well, there are some stories. Crows are so sweet. They are. And they will some, and good luck with that. I mean, you need a special crow to do that. It's not like every crow will do that. But repeated behavior on your part will bring repeated and better behavior on their part.
Oh, come on.
Yes, seriously.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
If you bring that donut out and put it on a fence post day after day, once they learn that if they come to that fence post, there's a donut waiting for them.
Yeah.
It could be a jelly donut. Could be a cider donut.
What?
They will come back. And if they associate you with that, then you're off and running. Mm-hmm.
And what are they going to bring? Are they going to bring you a donut?
Yeah. They might bring you a colorful stone.
Really? You're kidding me.
Yeah, they leave little gifts.
Well, I know they leave little gifts, but you really don't want them around most of the time.
The gifts of the nicer kind.
Oh, I see. Yes. Well, Mame, that's where we'll have to end the show, on that unfortunate note. And thank you very much for calling. Well, Rich Guthrie, you've got an event coming up, right?
I do, and that will be on March 2nd at the Colony Sanford Library in Colony, New York, and that's a little program I'm delivering in the evening at 6:30 p.m.
Outstanding. Well, good luck with that. We'll see you soon. Support comes from Interactive Media Consulting, a team of online market strategists providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond since 1996, imediaconsult.com. Archive, fine art storage, Hudson Valley, Brooklyn, L.A., providing regional museums, galleries, historic sites with secure climate-controlled storage, trucking, air freight installation, and rigging, archivefineart.net. Saratoga Jewish Community Arts presenting Israeli dancing at 5:30 p.m. at Skidmore College. 518-584-8730, option 2 for reservations. At Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York, providing the greater capital region with custom-built displays for trade shows, museums, and special events, your partner for a custom experience. EmpireExhibits.com. Once again, thanks to the great Rich Guthrie for being here. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to Zach Malloy, who handled the controls. Ed Rosen answered the phones. Thanks to Jim Lavoulis and Jackie Orchard. And I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Bob Berman and Valerie Rapson return to talk about the stars and such. Stand by now for 51%.